I'm Steve Terrell, KSFR, here with Andy Lyman from New Mexico Political Report. And last week, the governor signed a bunch of bills that were pretty controversial when they went through the legislature. Let's talk about some of those, Andy. There is the so-called Right to Die or Aid in Dying bill. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that one, I think for the proponents of it, you can call this a huge win for them because it's been tried for a number of years. I think similar to legalization, there was the Democrats were pushing this even when they had a governor who clearly wasn't going to sign something like this.
And right.
It becomes really controversial when you get the Catholic Church involved because they're they stick to their guns on that, they're anti-abortion, anti-death penalty, and of course anti-aid in dying. So I think there was a big hurdle to get over with this stuff, and it becomes sort of a emotional debate because anybody that was watching this a few years ago probably remembers Judge Whitefield, who is now passed away, and she had, she was really struggling with cancer at the time, and she sort of, appealed to them, to the legislators, saying, I need rights to, be able to essentially end my suffering. Former Representative Bill McCamley, who is now Department of Workforce Solutions Secretary, he had a very personal story about his dad previous years. And then this year was the big sort of the real emotional story came from Representative Deborah Armstrong and her daughter, Erin Armstrong, who is one of the namesakes for the medical cannabis law.
Right.
So I think it really starts to pull on the heartstrings of these lawmakers and hear these stories of people that are probably going to die, or not probably, are going to die really soon, but they have to, sort of stick through the suffering of that. So, yeah, I think it's a big win for those proponents this year.
What exactly does the bill do, or the law now? What does it do?
It essentially, I believe it still has to be self-administered. I think that's because of a federal law that, or maybe not a federal law, but basically it's a workaround, so to speak, that you're not the doctor is not injecting the medicine or administering the medicine. Instead, it's somebody I think they have to take it themselves. Like, I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure that's how it has to be. But other than that, I think there's some checks and balances there too to make sure that this is not something that somebody's getting coerced into. Essentially, just at the basic level, is it allows somebody to take a lethal dose of medication themselves to end their own life.
And it has to be prescribed, right, by a doctor?
Right, yeah. That's some of the checks and balances. You have to go through kind of some hoops to do it. You have to, have the doctor approve it. I think there might be a waiting period in there. And all these things were sort of baked in over the years because these are concerns that were raised. And even this year, the biggest concern was that this might be a slippery slope where people might be coerced into doing this from doctors as to, I think one story was, it's sort of an anecdote, and there's nothing to back it up that it actually happened. But it's just sort of a hypothetical story of that a doctor tells a husband, or tells the dying patient, "You're going to be a burden on your family, so maybe you should do this." And I don't know hate to bring that up because I don't know that that's really something that happens. But there's all these checks and balances to make sure that it is something that somebody actually does have some sort of condition, that they're not going to make it, and that they're not coerced, and that everything is above board.
Another real controversial one is what's called the Civil Rights Bill, which basically does away with qualified immunity for government officials such as police. You can sue them individually. Is that correct? What does this bill do?
I don't know that. I think it's more. It's not necessarily a personal. They might be named as something, but this is really getting at this idea, even in law or in the Constitution anywhere, it's just sort of this judicial standard sort of thing that was created a number of years ago that basically says you can't sue somebody, or you can't sue a police department or a public body or a public official if they have not been put on notice that this whatever action they took was a violation of civil rights. So there's a whole long list of cases, particularly here out of New Mexico, where somebody's civil rights may have been violated, but the judge says, well, this police officer was not notified that this specific action could be a violation of someone's civil rights, so they have qualified immunity there. So it's much more complicated than that, but that's the sort of simplified version of it. So this just allows people to sue those folks at a state level easier. We already do have the ability to, under the Tort Claims Act, but the awards in that, the money involved in that is significantly lower than what you could do in federal court. So many times these cases had to go to federal court because it's less restrictive to, and there's some timing issues on the Tort Claims Act and really sort of narrowly worded on what you can and can't sue people for or public officials for. So this just makes it a little easier to, or at least the proponents say this makes it a little bit easier to hold those folks accountable in state district court.
Law enforcement sure fought that during the session, didn't they?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the concerns were, you know, that this is going to, well, one issue, one concern that I heard come up numerous times was that it's going to make police officers, you know, sort of second-guess themselves and maybe not do their job well enough, thinking that they're going to get sued. The other issue was, you know, what the insurance rates are going to go for all these things and if they're going to bankrupt these industry, or not industries, I'm sorry, public bodies. But I think the counter argument to that is, you know, the easiest way to stop getting sued is to stop doing things that are wrong or illegal.
Well, that's a novel idea, yeah. All righty. Well, getting away from the legislature for a minute, I bet you'd like to get away from the legislature for a while. The congressional race there down in Albuquerque to replace Deborah Holland is picking up. Aubrey Dunn, former Republican, former land commissioner, jumped into the race. They've already got a Republican candidate, Mark Moores. This can't be good news for Mark Moores, can it?
Probably not. And to add into that mix, we'll see what there's a pending, you know, legal challenge, but there's a Libertarian candidate as well. And folks that have been sort of keeping score, so to speak, you know, Aubrey Dunn is sort of, you know, not necessarily, I think he did register as a Libertarian at one point to run.
Yeah, he was a Senate candidate.
Yeah. And so he's sort of got an interesting relationship with the Libertarian Party. So now you've got, you know, conservative or Republican Mark Moores, and you've got Aubrey Dunn, who sort of rides the line there between Libertarian and conservative. And then you've got an actual Libertarian candidate. So I think the votes are, I hate to say that the votes are going to get split, because who knows how that's going to work and if that ever actually happens or who gets votes taken from who. But yeah, I think there's, at this point, there's only one sort of candidate from the left, the Democrats, and three sort of on the other side.
Well, come on, Socialist Workers Party, get busy here. Come on, Green Party, come back to life.
I should say also, there's the legal challenge I mentioned is there's a woman who's part of the Libertarian Party, Ginger Grider, is challenging the candidacy of that Libertarian candidate, saying that, number one, they shouldn't be a major party. They should have gotten signatures based on them being a minor party. But then also that she thinks that the candidate Chris Manning was not picked legitimately through the party. So we'll see how that court case goes. I guess there's a chance that Chris Manning could be disqualified as a candidate.
And he doesn't even live in the district, right?
No, yeah. And many people sort of have asked me about that. And federal law says you don't actually have to live in the district. You just have to live in the state.
Right.
But of course, that could affect, you know, voters if you're living in Albuquerque and there's a guy from Farmington area, I believe Farmington area, somewhere up in that corner of the state. I think maybe Kirkland is where he's from. But yeah, I mean, that definitely, I'm sure he's going to get the votes from registered Libertarians in the district.
Right, right. Well, Andy, as always, it's great talking to you. I hope to talk to you next week. We may have some more bills signed into law by then. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve.